Welcome to the Enlightened Productivity Series. In this segment, productivity expert Rhonda Victor will help you grow your emotional self-awareness so you make healthier, more connected decisions in work and life. Notice what she reveals about emotional hijacking. Interviewing Rhonda today is Michelle Bailey. Michelle is a communication expert who helps you to create meaningful and mutually beneficial relationships at work and in life.
So tell me, what is emotional intelligence?
Well, Michelle, emotional intelligence is a combination of my awareness of my own emotions and my awareness of others' emotions. And when I have a highly developed emotional intelligence, it means that my awareness of my emotions and others' emotions allows me to make healthier decisions.
And is that teachable?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, it's one of the intelligences that is teachable long into adult life. So our IQ, our intellectual component, we're really born with that, and that piece evolves and can grow with education. But we start with what we start with, and our personality, which a lot of us measure our personality type, that's really set in stone by our early 20s. But our emotional intelligence is the one piece that can keep evolving long into adulthood. So it's absolutely teachable.
And so how do you help people develop this?
The first piece we usually start with is the emotional self-awareness. So one of the pieces that I work closely with people on is having them really begin to notice their emotions and notice the impact those emotions are having on their everyday decisions, and especially how those emotions might be influencing them in tough situations, whether that be at work or in their personal life.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, the first piece I like to have people really wrap their heads around is understanding how their emotions are playing into what they feel are very rational decisions that they tend to make on a regular basis. So people listening to this might have seen on my program, I will demonstrate the way that our rational brain, that neocortex at the front of our brain, the way that interacts with the emotion center, which is really at the back of our skull, the base of our brain, that emotion center has been in that same location since caveman days, and in fact was part of the original makeup of our ancient brain. So way back in the day, we only had that. We only had that emotion center. It guided fight or flight, and it worked really closely with our long-term memory. So those centers are situated very closely in the brain, and when we look at how we think and function today, those pieces still move really quickly, which is why the fight or flight piece works, because it's a very instant reaction. Our emotions flood in that same kind of fast-moving speed. So what happens today is that we end up experiencing an emotional hijack when our emotion center floods our rational thinking brain with emotions, and then we move forward and we make decisions based on those emotions, but not really recognizing that we've even experienced them. Have you ever experienced that situation where you're watching someone, maybe a friend or a coworker, and you think to yourself, wow, they don't even realize how thrown off they've become by this situation?
Many times.
It's so easy to notice that in other people.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we notice that, wow, they something really difficult has just happened to them, and they appear to be behaving almost irrationally. And what's interesting is that to that person, if you were to have a conversation with that person, they would say, I'm being very rational. Isn't that the case?
Yes, absolutely.
And they actually, they are being rational. They're using their rational brain, that neocortex, they're using it to file through possibilities and make strategic action plans. The problem with the situation and the reason that we witness them making unhealthy decisions in that state is that they're making those very rational choices using incomplete and sometimes inaccurate information from their emotion center. Because they haven't paused to really notice what's happening in the emotion center.
And so is that a big part of how you help people, is pausing? Or what are some of the methods that you use to help people with this?
Yeah, pause is huge. It's the first step in the whole process of beginning to deeply notice what we're doing and be able to shift that. So slowing down the response is one of the first pieces. So I encourage people to begin when they start to notice that they've been thrown off, that maybe an emotional hijack has occurred within themselves, because it's easy to notice in other people, but not so much in myself. When I start to notice that a hijack might have occurred, that's my cue to pause.
So I'm just curious there. You say notice some of the cues. What are some of the cues? I know myself, it might be my heart rate might increase or something. Is that what you're talking about?
Definitely. The physical signs are the first cue that I encourage people to notice. So when you begin to feel that rush of negative emotion, and that could include fear or frustration or annoyance, all ranges from mild to more significant. Notice where you feel it in your body. So where did you say you feel it in your body, Michelle?
It'll be my chest area for sure.
So that tightening in your chest is a really common one. Mm. For other people, it's the tightening in their stomach, that feeling nervous butterflies can be there as well. For other people, it's their shoulders get tight.
And I can't breathe. Is that common?
Yes, it is. It is. It almost takes our breath away. And if we reflect back to that ancient brain caveman days, when we get that rush of fear, it's that that can happen even today in situations that aren't as physically dangerous as it might have been the kind of situation that a caveman was facing, but in other situations, we feel it in our bodies. I feel it in my throat. That's one of the first places that really tenses up for me, and when I start to notice that I'm possibly in the midst of an emotional hijack. So our physical body reactions are the first cue that I encourage people to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another cue that that others can be helpful in helping you identify as well. The cue of noticing what your umbrella word is for negative emotion.
Oh, what's an umbrella word?
So every one of us has a word that we tend to use most often when we're feeling negative emotions. So even though we have giant vocabularies, we get stuck on one word and we use it all the time. So we'll find yours in a, right here.
I can hardly wait.
So think about what your conversation might look like at the end of a day that did not go particularly well. Something happened, whether it was a giant negative event or just a series of minor negative events. And you come home at the end of the day and the phone rings and it's a good friend and they say, "How was the day today, Michelle? How might you describe that day? How might you describe how you're feeling about that day?"
What's my first,
your go-to?
Yeah, you're not going to believe what happened today.
So unbelievable. That might be one. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So that might be your word. I'm going to share a few others that are really common. And if any of them bing, bing, bing in your mind, then that might be one for you as well. Many times the umbrella words will be something like frustrating, annoying, overwhelming. When we use those words, it can be about the day or it can be about a specific situation, like, "Oh, she's so frustrating," or "I'm feeling so aggravated," or we use slang terms like pissed off or ticked off. Those are also really common ones. And if you're listening and an expletive is coming to mind, that could be your go-to word as well. That could be your umbrella word. Whatever word seems to surface most often. And interestingly, a lot of the folks I've been coaching lately, the word has been overwhelmed. Their umbrella is, it's just too much. So for me, mine is frustrating. It doesn't really matter if I am heartbroken, disappointed, or just rip-roaring mad. No matter what the real emotion is, the umbrella word I put over it is frustrated.
And that captures all of those emotions, right? Okay. So what other things? So we've got body awareness. There's the umbrella word. What else?
Those are the two that I encourage people to start with. So we're going to play with those. So if you notice within yourself, I'm starting to feel some constriction. And wherever that constriction is within you, stomach, chest, throat, shoulders, back, wherever you begin to feel that constriction, that's a red flag. And if you notice yourself saying your umbrella word or thinking it about a certain situation, then that's also a sign that you're very likely in the midst of emotional hijacking. It's time to pause. So the first thing to do is to just really pause and take that deep breath. And really start to notice what's happening within you. We get moving along at this fast pace and we don't really pause to notice what's actually happening. So if we want to deepen our emotional self-awareness, those cues will help us to pause. Now, once we've paused, I'm going to take you through a process that will help you understand in a deeper way what's actually happening within your emotions, so that you can then, at the end of it all, make a healthier choice. And just so that we have a sense of why we're going in this direction, most of us, our go-to is we feel this rush of emotion, we deal with it in whatever way we deal with it, and we go straight to, what action am I going to take? How am I going to deal with this situation? And as I've certainly experienced and watched my clients experience, that can be a very draining process, and the end result is often a direction or a decision that I'm not really thrilled with in the end. I go down a path that didn't really feel like it was serving me or my client or my family or my relationship very well.
It was more reactive, wasn't it, then?
Absolutely, yeah. Certainly we're trained and taught to move quickly and to respond quickly. That's often a requirement of the job for many of us. And so that idea of slowing it down and pausing can seem contrary to productivity. And so when I share these techniques with people, the end goal is always to become more productive and not just productive in terms of pumping out the work, but doing the right work and feeling like you have energy at the end of it. For those who are listening on the audio, there's a PDF attached to the program. And if you haven't already printed it off or pulled it up on your computer, do that, because I'm going to walk you, Michelle, through the process of identifying what you're really feeling in a situation.
Great.
All right. So unbelievable was one of the possible words, your impossible umbrella words that you came to. So if you feel that constriction within yourself or you find yourself using that umbrella word, that's a time to pause. And after you pause, we want to try and get more specific about what we're actually feeling. So the PDF, it's a single page PDF, that piece will help you to pinpoint what you're actually feeling. So if you've got the page handy, just hold on to it for a moment and think right now about a situation, and preferably in the last week or so, last couple of days ideally, where you felt that constriction happen, where you felt that umbrella word being used. Just pause for a moment to think about an example. And if you need to pause the audio while you do that, go ahead. Think of an example when you were feeling an emotion that you were putting that umbrella word on, and we'll explore that in a moment. So do you have an example in mind, Michelle?
Yeah, I do, actually. Something that just happened a couple days ago.
Okay, perfect. So we'll use that as the example. So in that situation, you found yourself constricting and you were using your umbrella word. So ideally, in that moment, you want to pause and implement this strategy. That's often not possible in the middle of a meeting or the middle of a conversation. So the exercise is equally as effective if you do it at the end of the day and you're in some reflection time. So we're doing that now. We're reflecting back a couple of days ago. So the first thing you want to do is really pause and ask yourself, what am I feeling exactly? So the page that you have before you will help you to identify what you might be feeling exactly. So as you scan through that long list of words, choose, put a dot beside any of the words that you feel could describe what you were feeling in that moment. And there might be 4 or 5 or 10 of those words that accurately describe emotions you were having. So take a moment just to put dots beside those words right now, and then we'll choose one of them to go a little further in the exercise with. So you can pause the audio to take a moment to really go through and choose all the words that accurately fit that particular situation. Now that you have those pinpointed, it's really interesting to just notice how many words really describe what you were feeling. The fact that there was this pool of emotion. As you glanced through, Michelle, did you notice that there were emotions from different categories that you were feeling in that same circumstance?
Absolutely. When you said pick out one word, or you said something about one word, I'm going, what's wrong with me?
And I think that's really interesting to notice, because oftentimes we think things are black and white. We think we are angry or we are sad. And very often, we're actually feeling a real collection of different emotions. So to me, that in itself is a really interesting piece to notice. And it helps us to begin to have compassion for ourselves, which will spill over and allow us to have compassion for others when things seem a bit muddier than that black and white which we were hoping things would be. So as you look at this muddy pool of different emotions that you were feeling in that situation, for the purpose of walking through this exercise, choose one of those words that you're most interested in exploring. It could be a word that surprised you about that situation, like, wow, I was feeling that. Or it could be a word that was on the high intensity side that maybe surprised you as well. So choose just one of them, and we'll walk through the exploring of that. Which one jumped out for you, Michelle, as the word that was either surprising or of a higher intensity than you might have thought in the moment?
Aggravated.
Okay. So whatever word you chose for the listeners, whatever word you chose, just notice that word. And as you notice it, begin to feel what that would feel like in your body. So the situation happened yesterday or a few days ago, but feel that in your body. Where would that feel? So for you, Michelle, how would aggravated feel in your body?
I feel this tenseness and this tightness in my shoulders, in my throat. My shoulders start to raise right away. I feel my body temperature going, like getting hotter. And I feel a lot of tension around my mouth and my eyes, you know, that whole area. It's like my face is really, really tight.
So beautiful description of how that feels. And whatever word you chose, and if it's feeling like, oh, this is not comfortable, relax. We're going to take you out of this in a few minutes. I can see you actually tensing up, Michelle. What's really interesting when we start to explore emotional intelligence is actually allowing ourselves to physically feel the emotions that have flooded into our brain. They are there, and we've either neatly tucked them into a compartment or swept them under a rug or whatever method we have for setting it aside so we can deal with the task at hand. And we don't allow ourselves to actually feel it. And part of moving through an emotion and then making a healthy decision is actually feeling it for what it is and being with it for a moment.
It's that acceptance part that you were talking about before.
Absolutely. We've had great conversations about acceptance and moving toward that as part of our growth toward that enlightened productivity state. So I'm going to share with you my example as we move through as well, the one that really rings for me when I first learned about emotional intelligence. The example that I used, the first time rather, that I really applied this particular strategy, I had learned my umbrella word was frustrated. So I was on the phone with a colleague of mine who I do a lot of great work with and someone who frustrates me. So I hung up the phone after a conversation with her and I actually muttered to myself, oh, she's so frustrating. And there was my cue, my red flag to pause. I thought, hey, there's my umbrella word. So you'll notice it just popping up here and there. So I was able to pause right in that moment. And luckily I had this sheet of emotion words handy and I pulled it out and I took that deep breath and that pause. And when I looked through that emotion words sheet, I was really surprised that the word that popped out at me was disappointed. So from a feeling it in my body kind of state, it's very different to feel frustrated, which is that mild source of aggravation, to feeling disappointed. So when I embodied that, it was like, oh, I went from a little bit huffy, you know, chest puffed out, kind of annoyed, frustrated, into, slumped forward and head hanging low and feeling this sort of weight in my chest and feeling a little frog in my throat, a little sadness. When I noticed that, things shifted for me. So the importance of allowing your body to actually feel that for a moment, it can't be underestimated. It really does shift us in ways that we wouldn't be able to do if we simply stayed on a cerebral thinking about it, identifying it with a name kind of level. We need to feel it in our bodies.
When you describe that to me, it feels more like you're going right to the cause, too, rather than dealing with a symptom, in a sense. It's like you're getting more to the root. Am I
Absolutely.
Correct with that?
Yeah, it feels like it's going below the surface. Mm. That's totally what it feels like for me, that my umbrella word is like a surface paint that I just, you know, glaze over all of those situations with, whereas this drills down to that core, to that cause, to really the heart of it, if you will, of what I'm actually feeling in that moment.
And that's where the, well, I don't know if this is the word, healing needs to take place, or the remedy is, really, isn't it? It's at that cause level.
Absolutely.
Rather than the symptom level.
Mm. Yes, yeah, and that, I think that's a great description, that healing piece, because as we're moving through our busy work lives and our in sometimes intense relationships, there's so much that's happening that we don't recognize, and when we don't recognize it, it stays there and it festers and it grows and it can remain quite raw even if we don't recognize it at the start, but then we start to see it seep out, and we've experienced seeing that in others, and we begin to see it in ourselves. So as a listener, if you haven't yet paused to feel whatever key word jumped out at you, just pause the audio for a moment and take a few deep breaths and really embody what that emotion would feel like. And allow yourself to feel it for a moment, and then come back after you've allowed yourself to feel that for a moment. So once you've experienced how that feels in your body, and if you're following along with your PDF, we've gone through steps 1 and 2 of those 4 steps of growing your emotional self-awareness. So once you get through that second step, then we move on to step 3, which is asking yourself the powerful question of, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel this particular emotion? So as you're pondering that, just notice what comes up. This is often where we have light bulb moments of understanding about ourselves or about the relationship or even about maybe an old piece of history that's peeking in at us. Just notice what comes up when you ask yourself, why do I feel this way? Michelle, does anything come up for you in terms of what you notice when you ask that question?
Well, actually, yes. But it ties back to your previous point is okay. So I said, first of all, the word was aggravated. But what also leapt out at me was ashamed. Mm. And I was almost too ashamed to say ashamed.
Thank you for being brave enough to share that with us.
So by you saying that, I realized, okay, that was the deeper. And so why is because it reminded me of past experiences that I've had where I felt that same kind of shame or being ashamed. And, of course, it can be easier to try to blame the other person for that than take any responsibility for it myself, right? So it would definitely be past history. Similar situations that I felt that same kind of response, yeah.
Mm, interesting to notice. And as you're noticing whatever, as a listener, whatever is coming up for you, I encourage you to simply notice whatever is coming out without judging it. Just notice, interesting. And as you explore this journey of emotional intelligence and emotional self-awareness, that phrase, interesting, is such a wonderful phrase to repeat. Is that one you've used before, Michelle?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Have you found it useful?
Yes.
I first learned that phrase in a scientific setting. So a scientist who's setting out on an experiment, if the experiment doesn't go in the way they expected it to, if that particular scientist decided, well, to heck with this experiment, and they shoved it aside, they would likely miss out on an opportunity to make a great discovery. So instead, scientists are trained to notice what's happening, even when it's unexpected or unwanted, to notice it and say, interesting. And the moment that we say that, we stop judging it and we stop constricting around it, because as soon as we start to judge, we get some kind of constriction. And that phrase, interesting, opens us back up to possibilities and opens us up to learn.
Feedback.
Yeah, opens us to feedback, sure. Mm. Feedback from others and feedback from ourselves, too. Mm. Yeah. Mm. And so use that phrase if your answer to why do I feel this way is bringing up something surprising. You noted, Michelle, that what was coming up for you was memories of other similar situations where you felt that way. It's so common that the way I react in this moment isn't so much about this moment as it is about my long-term memory, my past experiences. And what's interesting from a physiological perspective is that, remember, at the base of our brain, the back of our brain, where that ancient brain is situated, that the amygdala, the hippocampus, the limbic system, all those systems are working together. And the long-term memory center is right next door to the emotion center. And they work so closely in tandem that we sometimes can't tell them apart. So we'll react really strongly to a present situation when it's actually not about this situation at all. It's about a past situation. So training ourselves to pause and notice that, well, it allows us to then see this present situation in a different light, much more open and much more calm, and which is, as we know, going to help us to make better decisions.
It reminds me of something a coach said to me one time. He said, observe, don't absorb. And it's been great advice.
Yeah,
because
observe.
It is the observation of it that is more scientific in a sense than.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the Four Agreements. One of the Four Agreements is a beautiful book. If you've never read that book, one of the Four Agreements is to take nothing personally, mm-hmm. and that jives with what you said about don't absorb it, just observe it, notice it. Yeah. So notice whatever's coming up for you. When I asked myself that question in the scenario I was sharing with you, I had this frustrating conversation with my colleague. I hung up and felt frustrated and then realized, I'm feeling disappointed. When I asked myself, why am I feeling disappointed? Because that was nowhere on the radar. When I hung up that phone, there was no feeling of shoulder slumping disappointment. It was only kind of frustration, mild frustration. But when I ask myself, why do I feel this way? I realized that it's right away struck me that I had hoped she would offer to help me with a project. She had helped me with a similar project months before, and I'd hoped that she would offer to help. But interestingly, that I wasn't conscious of that when I was having the conversation. It wasn't on my radar. But it was in the back of my mind. It was in the motion center, and so that was flooding forward. And just noticing that was a real, wow, I didn't even realize that I wanted help with this project. But obviously on an emotional level, I did.
So that, to me, it's like the scientific mind that you talked about. I think there's something about not having any expectations, isn't there, as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, it's true, isn't it? We can really set ourselves up for disappointment when we go in with a series of expectations, especially when we're not even aware of those expectations. Because if I'm not aware of them, I can't ask for help with them. I can't put them out there in any concrete, clear kind of way. So it's definitely damaging to that interaction. So if you haven't come up with an answer for yourself as you're listening to this, this particular example you've thought of, pause for a moment and ask yourself, why do I feel this way? And what is this really about? Take a moment to ask that question, and even ask it two or three times to go a layer deeper and a layer deeper. If it's feeling like your initial answer isn't quite it, that there's maybe something else, or there's maybe something else below that. Take a moment to answer that for yourself and notice what comes up. So once you've identified why you are feeling this way and what it's really about, our information that we're using to make a decision is now so much more accurate and complete. In the example that I gave, I now know that I had this expectation for help and that it wasn't met. And for you, Michelle, you shared that it's not so much about this particular moment, it's about how this experience is reminding me of a past experience when I felt ashamed. So with that new knowledge, that deeper knowledge, now, after that, we can go to step four, which is, what do I want to do about this? We tend to jump to that one really quickly most times. But now that we've paused and really felt the emotion and explored it a bit, now we can ask, what do I want to do about it?
And as you're saying, that is a decision-making question, but we're in a better state to actually make that decision now.
We are.
Right.
Yeah, we're better informed, and we're very likely much more calm because we've worked through the emotion. I liken it to watching a young child, a toddler or a preschooler, who still has really big emotions and they will show them at will. And when we watch that toddler get frustrated with trying to tie his shoes and, you know, throw the shoe on the floor and stomp on the shoe and maybe cry for a moment, what we need to notice is what happens after that. That toddler is just in the happiest zone ever. They are calm. They move on. They do not hold a grudge to the shoe. They're often able to sit down and try diligently to do it again, and they'll often achieve some success.
Because it is very natural, right? And I think we've been taught not to do that, right? Somewhere along the line, we got taught not to respect those feelings and those emotions.
And I love that you use the word respect. Noticing them, respecting them, giving them the honoring them is part of being able to move through to making wiser decisions for ourselves, for our organizations, for our families. And I often am asked by people, is emotional intelligence all about me talking about my feelings? Or is it about throwing tantrums like we see young children? And of course, that's not what it's about. It's not about showing the emotions in those big, giant ways that small children do. They are just meeting their emotions for the first time. They're giant for that reason. We move too far in the other direction, as you alluded to. We move too far away from feeling them at all. So what I'm inviting people to do is to come back to plugging into them. And we only need to plug into them for a short time to feel the shift within ourselves, to move to that latter state of calm and then to that deeper sense of satisfaction with our choices. We only need to feel the emotion for a short time. And in fact, I would really invite people to be conscious of slipping into feeling them in a huge way for extended periods of time. If you know that about yourself, if you know that you tend to have a dramatic way about showing emotion, recognize that about yourself and notice when this is too much. You know, going into this emotion isn't the right fit for me right now because it's going to be overwhelming. It's just going to continue and continue and it's not going to feel healthy. You need to know that about yourself.
So what I'm hearing with you, Rhonda, to me, it seems like having a conscious choice. A lot of the time, I think we're not conscious, nor are we making the choice.
Good observation. Yeah. So,
am I correct? Is that what you're alluding to as well? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. When we're deeply conscious about what's happening around us and within us, we have that really that calm state about us, and we're able to tap into intuition and we're able to move forward in a way that brings a certainty. And that's such a beautiful place to be at when we're making decisions and choices, to tap into that sort of deep certainty. So when we come to this place of what do I want to do, we are now equipped to answer that. And the options are lengthy. And that's interesting to note in itself, because I know that when I get stuck on something, I'm stuck between A or Z. There's nothing in between. There's either the extreme of A, the extreme of Z, and I don't like either of those choices. Have you ever experienced that?
Mm-hmm.
But if we move through the emotional self-awareness process, then suddenly we see B and C and D and E and F and all these other possibilities that weren't even really within our option pool before, because we hadn't really identified what was happening. So some of the things that you can do would be to have a conversation with someone about what you felt and how that looked. So sometimes you might want to talk about your feelings. Sometimes you might want to physically release whatever had come up for you. So the benefit of physical activity and being outside can plug us back into a cleaner source of energy, and we can release some of that pent-up anger or frustration or aggravation or whatever emotion bubbled out. Because remember, as those emotions are flooding forward, hormones are flooding through, adrenaline is flooding through, and we need to physically move that through. So that's often an action. Some kind of self-care is something that I often encourage people to do. And then there is a direct action that would fit your circumstance. So maybe you want to act on that emotion, not necessarily to talk about your feelings, but you want to phone someone, initiate something. And the last piece that you may choose when you ask yourself this question is you might choose to let it go. And that's a really interesting one. I know the very first time that I practiced this exercise, it was with the situation that I've been sharing with you. I hung up the phone with that colleague. I felt that disappointment. I realized I had wanted to have her offer help. And when I sat back to think, okay, what do I want to do about this? I don't really want to talk to her about my disappointment. It didn't feel important enough. It didn't feel relevant to our relationship. I thought I could ask her for the help. That would be a direct action related to the situation.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I could phone her back and say, hey, could you help me with this? And I thought about that for a few minutes. And what I realized was I didn't actually need the help this time. I had needed it previously. She had offered it and I'd been grateful for it. But when I really thought about it, I thought, I don't actually need the help this time. And then, as though without effort, it was let go. So in that circumstance, I didn't actually say, I'm going to let this go. It was not nearly that businesslike. It unfolded that way. And that, for me, was a big moment. It was a really surprising turn of events. It was an unfolding that I had not expected. And when I thought back, for years, close friends and family members, when they would hear me ranting about something, they would say, oh, Rhonda, it just feels like this is something you need to let go of. And that was so annoying. It was to the point of sheer aggravation. If one more person tells me to just let it go, I'm going to scream. I don't know if you ever experienced that in your life.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not stubborn in the least bit, Rhonda.
Oh, maybe is it our stubbornness that draws us out?
No, that's certainly been my lesson with it. Sometimes, well, you know, it's like I've heard of the word surrender, and you know, I think sometimes there can be a connotation that that's a weakness. It's actually a strength sometimes. It's what I've discovered. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what you mean by letting go, but that's certainly been. Yeah, I don't have to be right anymore either. Maybe that's maturity as well.
It's quite a relief. Mm. And I find I don't need to be right within myself. Mm. Even if, because in that example I gave you, no one else was party to the conversation in my head. No one was there to notice that I was disappointed and that I was then letting that go. It was just an internal conversation.
I know, and some of the training that I did with NLP, this neuro-linguistic programming, one of the things that we explored was that there wasn't a right or wrong to emotions either. And I think that's where sometimes we can get stuck, is by thinking that, well, because I'm angry, that's bad. It isn't always, you know, it's where can anger actually be useful. So it is about the respecting, I think, of it too, which can make it easier to let go of certain states when we don't judge them so much.
Yeah, the judgment that we put on negative feelings versus positive ones. I have to, you know, I have to set this aside, and how can I get happy again? How can I get happy again? And it's so interesting when we move through the emotion and notice it and understand it, that it will naturally ease away. And what's left is this calm state, which is a form of happiness, is a form of joy, is a form of connectivity, and in so much of what we're looking for when we talk about achieving that true enlightened productivity, that being very effective and very satisfied and very rooted in purpose. That state of feeling calm and clear and connected is really one of what I feel I'm working to create on a day-to-day, conversation-to-conversation kind of basis.
And it's like, as I think about the words that I gave you here, aggravated and ashamed, they actually, through time, became catalysts for me to make some changes, which has caused the calmness that you're talking about. So I think that's important, is to, again, respect that this could be happening because it is actually creating the change which will lead to the productivity that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. The exploring the negative side of our emotions, those ones that we tend not to peek into. Mm. I liken it to sort of peeking into our dark side. Mm. And when I do that, when I have done that over the last number of years, that's been a real journey for me, is peeking into that and understanding those fiery emotions or those negative emotions. And what I've found so interesting about that is that when I start to really notice those and understand them and honor them, respect them, and just notice them rather than guilting myself for having felt that or gone down that path. When I start to really notice that, what unfolds is this new form of understanding of others. I find that my empathy isn't forced. I don't have to remind myself, be empathetic, Rhonda, be empathetic.
You really are.
I really am. it just unfolds now. Because I've seen it in myself, I can with greater kindness see it in others.
I suppose what you're saying there has really touched me as a singer as well, because it's all about exploring emotions. And I remember my first, singing teachers saying to me, Michelle, singing is not thinking, right? It's about feeling. And how I had this conversation with another musician about, well, I only want to sing inspirational and positive music and upbeat stuff. And he said, well, if you do that, there never would have been the blues.
Which would be a sad state.
It would.
That's a beautiful phrase. Singing is not thinking. I would say to that end, leading is not thinking. And healthy decision-making is not thinking. It's not all about the thinking, that rational, planning mind. We make healthy thinking choices when we have paused to notice what's happening for us on the emotional level.
And the balance of that, isn't it?
Mm.
It's the balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So most of us are swung way too far onto one end of that balance scale where we're rationally thinking and strategizing and moving through. And for us to soften into noticing within ourselves, we'll make healthier choices for our companies and our communities and our relationships and our friendships. We'll make healthier choices. So if you haven't already paused to decide in this particular scenario that you're looking at, what do you want to do about it? Take a moment right now to think through all of that spectrum of A to Z options, all those ones in between, that might include letting go, that might include a particular action or speaking to someone about your emotions. And you might not need to speak to the person you were originally in conversation with when the incident occurred. It might be that you want to share your emotions that came up with someone that you trust. So maybe that's a friend or a family member, or a coach or a counselor or someone that can help you to heal if you've noticed that there's some healing that needs to be done. Maybe you want to journal or do some self-care around that to release it back into the world and feel like you can move beyond that. Or maybe there's another action that's specific to your scenario. But take a moment now to decide, now that you have all of this information, to decide what you want to do about that. So, Michelle, that process of emotional self-awareness is one that I work with my coaching clients on, and it's often the piece that even after 6 months of working together, it's the piece that has had the biggest impact on their ability to become truly productive in that focused way, to connect more effectively with their relationships. It's really a profound piece. I want to just talk for a moment about that moment when we notice that we're being emotionally hijacked. Going through the path of understanding what we're really feeling is an important piece that I encourage everyone to do. There'll be times after you've done that a few times, 4, 5, 6 times, and you'll do it in a reflective time, and then you might get to the point where you're doing it on the fly. You're in the middle of a meeting and you feel the emotional hijack happen, and you lean back in your boardroom chair and you pause and you say, whoa, what's that about? What am I really feeling? And you find yourself moving through it fairly quickly. What you might start to notice is that there are some patterns that are emerging of emotional hijacks. So that often links back to what you talked about earlier, where there's a past experience that's coming forward. So I don't know if you've ever noticed any patterns in your life.
A few.
So when we notice one of those patterns, once we have identified, hey, I've seen this before, I don't need to do the pause, what is this about, because I know what it's about. I know it's one of my old pieces of baggage that is reemerging. There's one more piece that I want to share with you that is a really quick way to, almost like a snap, to get back into being present and calm and in that moment. So for listeners, the second page of your PDF has a diagram that shows a couple of umbrellas, and we're going to talk about those for a moment. So when I'm in this place of openness and trust, I'm very present and I'm able to make great decisions. When I get emotionally hijacked, what tends to happen is I move into one of two dark umbrellas. So I move under the umbrella of future fear, or I move under the umbrella of past regret. So one of the things you noted was that you were reflecting back on a previous situation where you had felt ashamed. So that would fall
past
under this
regret. Yeah,
exactly, the past regret umbrella. And, you know, we're such complex beings in so many ways, yet I was shocked by how simple we are in that all of my hijacking emotions can fall under one of those umbrellas. Either I'm afraid something is coming and that shows up as worry or anxiety or uncertainty, or I have some past regret and that comes in the form of that guilt or shame some form of wish it hadn't gone that way. So when you notice that one of those old friends are back, one of those patterns is peeking up, you can first of all simply notice it. Interesting. Become a real that make that a mantra to repeat.
I'm real interesting.
We're all interesting in this regard. So interesting. There's that old past regret thought. If I just label it with that umbrella description, there's that old past regret. Then in doing that, I take some energy away from it. So it becomes less about this big, frightening kind of emotion. And it's as though I splat the label across it. Past regret. Know what that is, been there. And then I can consciously choose to come back to presence. So find a phrase that fits for you. It might be, there's that old past regret thought. Then a deep breath. I choose to focus on the present because that's all I have. It may be I choose to trust. And that could mean trust in yourself, trust in this relationship, trust in the universe and the community that you live in. That I think of open and trust and presence all in that beautiful starburst center place and these darker umbrellas on either end of that spectrum. We can come out of the umbrella into that light space by recognizing, okay, it's just future fear. It's just past regret. It's just that. I'm going to choose to come back here. You're nodding at me, Michelle, as though this is resonating with you, or as I might suspect that you already move and practice this yourself.
Mm. I use it with both, either the past or the future. It's just a story I'm telling myself, right? And the one in the future would be is trust. Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of trust. And in the past, it's not who I am. It's not the truth of who I am. It's just an old story.
Yeah. Great labeling of it. So if that resonates for you, call it, there's my old future fear story or my old past regret story. And those stories are repeated and repeated so often that we believe they're true. They're like folklore that we believe is true and we hold on to as truth. And what you shared, but that's not who I am. It's simply a thought.
And I found this last couple of days in the scenario that I gave you, too, I had been repeating to myself, I did the best I knew how at that time. I think that's very useful thinking for me when I get into any sort of regret about the past. It's all I knew how to do at that time. I didn't know how to do it any different.
I have experienced that same situation where when I pause and I step back and I stop swimming in that story, when I step back, I can notice that my best that day looks different than my best on a different day. And I think in the past, I would I would, you know, kick myself for not being the best of the best that day. And when I'm a more compassionate observer of myself, I'll notice that, okay, you know what? I was doing my best that day, considering how much rest I'd had or not had, as is usually the case when regret surfaces, considering the players and the energy of that particular situation, and considering all of the other pieces of life.
That's a good word, considering.
Considering, yeah. Am I doing my best? Considering. Dot, dot, dot.
That's a great word to describe it. Absolutely.
So as we notice that those repetitive pattern pieces come up, that can be a beautiful tool to use. It's very quick, and we can really personalize it to ourselves in terms of what do I want to draw myself back to. So pause for a moment right now to think about what you would like to draw yourself back to when you feel that you've been pulled into a future fear or a past regret place. Would you like to pull yourself back to presence, or to trust, or to openness, or if it's a personal situation, to love? Choose the word that's going to resonate for you, and it may be a different word in different situations. When I'm with people that are close to me, I'll pull myself back to love and openness. When I'm in a very corporate kind of setting, I'll often pull myself back to trust or presence as a way to make the decisions that I know are going to be the healthiest decisions for me. So emotional self-awareness, when we talked about emotional intelligence at the very start, we talked about it having two pieces, emotional self-awareness and awareness of others. The focus for today is awareness of ourselves. As I've mentioned in from different directions, when we really begin to have that deeper noticing of ourselves, we open ourselves to connect with others and begin to notice them. So as you begin to notice others, I encourage you to be willing to lean into that a little bit. So lean into noticing someone's emotion, noticing that they might be thrown off. And sometimes simply noticing it will shift the conversation, will shift the energy. Other times you might feel brave enough to ask, how are you doing? Where are you at with this? And very often it's just that very simple question that can open the door for them to share where they're at. And I see this with the managers I coach and the employees they're helping, and in personal relationships as well, when we're able to ask that question, just even to be open to noticing where they're at and hearing where they're at, it opens that opportunity for connection.
So this has been fabulous, Rhonda. There's just so much good information here. If there was just one key phrase, though, or one key word, what would that be that you'd want to leave the listeners with today?
Notice. That idea of deeply noticing where I'm at and what that's all about has had such a profound impact for me and for the clients I work with, as a way to really deeply inform their choices and connect them to their intuition and the wisdom that guides them to be successful in their work, to be successful in relationships, and to achieve that enlightened productivity. So notice.
That's fabulous. Thank you very much, Rhonda.
Thanks. Thank you, Michelle.
For the next segment of the Enlightened Productivity Series, or to learn more about Rhonda Victor, Productivity Expert, or today's interviewer, Michelle Bailey, visit rhondavictor.com. That's RhondaVictor.com.